WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Kids in private schools in Montgomery County will not be back in their buildings until October at the earliest. The county's health director, Dr. Travis Gales, issued an order yesterday telling private schools they will need to teach all their kids remotely through at least October 1st. COVID-19 cases are on the rise in the D.C. metro area, and Gales says the data does not suggest that in-person learning is safe for students or teachers. Public schools in Montgomery County, meanwhile, decided to do all classes online for the entire first semester. Some local parents continue to push back against plans by many school systems to start the year all online, including Arlington County Public Schools. This morning, the Arlington Parents for Education group will rally in front of the school headquarters for what they call a safe reopening of public schools. Group founder Chris Myers.
We'd like to get them to commit to coming back in a hybrid model, and we wanted to do it as soon as possible, but if every day these kids are not in the classroom is another lost opportunity for their educational future.
Myers says group members believe the cost of continuing to keep kids at home is too high to justify. Today's rally starts at 9. COVID-19 cases are going up in Prince George's County, and County Executive Angela Alsobrooks is putting a new restriction in place to stop the spread. Starting tonight at 5, social gatherings will be limited to 50 people, down from the current cap of 100. Alsobrooks said Thursday,
67% of all of our new infections are coming from large family gatherings and from house parties.
The new limit applies mostly to social get-togethers, not to capacity limits for restaurants, stores, or houses of worship. Hurricane Isaias is ripping shingles off roofs and blowing over trees as it carves its way through the Bahamas and heads toward the Florida coast. Meteorologist Tyler Malden.
It will continue to be a Category 1 hurricane, about 85, 90 mile per hour sustained winds with gusts even higher than that, and it skirts right along the east coast of Florida. So the eye may not actually come on shore, but even on that track, you're still going to feel hurricane force conditions along the east coast of Florida.
20 evacuation centers have been set up in Miami. And as Isaias prepares to move up the East Coast, Governor Ralph Northam has declared a state of emergency in Virginia. He says some parts of the state could feel impacts of the hurricane as early as this weekend. He says declaring a state of emergency will enable the state to mobilize resources to help with any needed response. The National Weather Service in Wakefield, Virginia says our region could get tropical storm force winds sometime Monday night. And if you're heading to Ocean City this weekend, and be careful in the water. The National Weather Service is putting a moderate rip current warning in place from 8 this morning through this evening. And if you're going to the boardwalk on Ocean City, you'll need to wear a mask from 8 a.m. to 2 a.m. daily under a new order by the mayor. A separate governor's order requires people to wear masks outside when they can't socially distance. And Mayor Rick Meehan said sometimes you can't on the boardwalk. Under the governor's order, violators could be charged with misdemeanors. In sports, the Wizards lost to the Suns 125-112 in their first game of the restart. Traffic and weather next.
Sunday, start your day with VA Sunday Magazine at 5. At 5:30, hear the Chris McKay Show. At 7, it's Heroes Talk Radio with David Ahrens. At 8, it's the Eric Stewart Show pointing you home. And at 8:30, it's Purity Products. Hear the Wise Investor at 9, Dr. Tom Rosell Live at 11, and the U-Turn Equity Financial Hour at 1. Purity Products returns at 2. Hear Mortgage Radio at 3, Real Estate Today at 7. And at 9 p.m., it's Lawyer in Your Corner with Ryan Wilson on WMAL.
Trading in involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the impact of coronavirus and the upcoming election, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text the word money to 411-411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trend changes with up to 87.4% accuracy. That's right, 87.4%. Text the word money to 411-411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and better protect yourself from sudden downturns. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. No more guessing when to stay or when to get out. Text MONEY to 411-411, and we'll send you a link to our free demo. Text MONEY to 411-411 so you can better protect your hard-earned capital with Vantage Point. Don't wait. Text the word MONEY to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Baltimore-Washington Parkway northbound, just north of 450, there is some accident activity on the right shoulder. All lanes reported to be open, but this was an accident with an overturned vehicle. Now on 66 westbound, some slow-going traffic through a work zone that is still in place between the Beltway and Nutley Street. They are along the left side of the roadway, so allow extra travel time if you're heading in that area. Also keep in mind this weekend that Beach Drive is closed between Kensington Parkway and Knowles Avenue for social distance recreation. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
The first day of August is bringing us near normal temperatures. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s today, although with high humidity it will feel more like the 90s. We're tracking the possibility of scattered PM storms. Some may be strong to severe, especially west of the district. Mostly dry but hotter tomorrow, back into the 90s, feeling over 100 at the peak of the day. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. It's hour two of the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined by John Gizzi. He's the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks. The impasse continues between the White House and Democrats on the coronavirus relief package. There is a meeting coming up at 9 o'clock this morning between Mark Meadows, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Steve Mnuchin will be there. So what is the White House perspective, John, as we go into the weekend?
For 5 days last week, it was a case, to use an expression from the Cuban Missile Crisis, of two sides who are eyeball to eyeball, only in this case, nobody blinked. Look, the Democrats in the House passed the HEROES Act with a $3 trillion price tag. This includes, of course, the $600 a week unemployment compensation, as well as the ban on evictions, something continued from the previous legislation. It also has other things in it, including funding for mail-in ballots in the election, as well as a cutting down and limitation on police patrols and the role that federal dollars play in them. Republicans seized on that as anti-cop or cop-aiding. In addition, the Republicans want a ban on lawsuits against business. And in their own package, which is $1 trillion. Overall, there's too many different areas of disagreement to come to conclusion, and this is as the payments to people in need have run out. My guess is at the meeting today, they will find some common ground, how to continue the ban on evictions, which is critical, and how to continue some form of compensation to those Americans who aren't working and bringing home a paycheck. If those two points can be reached, then perhaps some temporary legislation will be crafted and voted on next week. Now remember, the Senate is now scheduled to adjourn August 7th. That's going to be a very critical date. And a week from now, if we're still talking about this, voters may just look at the leadership of both parties and say, a plague on both your houses.
You mentioned mail-in ballots, John. President Trump fired a torpedo Thursday morning, and here's the shot heard round the world. With universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote with a question mark. That launched a firestorm.
I think you said it right, Rick. It was the tweet heard round the world. Yesterday, I was at Speaker Pelosi's weekly news conference in the Capitol, and she was indeed dwelling on this for a while. Delaying the election. Where did he get that from? Putin? She said. The Speaker of the House said that this is out of the question and that for the President to bring it up cast doubts on the electoral process. She also pointed out that absentee ballots and mail-in ballots are things that, at least in her native state of California, Republicans have always supported because they've done very well. I have to say, the speaker may have a point there. Earlier this year, Republicans won a special election for Congress in a Democrat-held seat in Southern California, and this is when an overwhelming majority of voters voted through the mail system. In any event, the president was backtracking Thursday night on this, and he was saying the election would not be delayed. He merely meant that the counting of ballots would be delayed if there were too much voting by absentee or mail-in ballots. In any event, it seems as though he's created an issue at which Democrats can talk about and perhaps get some mileage from. I know at least one candidate who was sending out a mailing calling for support for his candidacy so he can stop Donald Trump from delaying the election.
So Tuesday on Capitol Hill, it was the showdown, Attorney General William Barr versus the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee. You summed it up in your headline, State Attorneys General cheer administration star Barr. I think that pretty well sums it up.
It certainly does. For 5 hours plus, Attorney General William Barr maintained his temper, kept his cool demeanor, and defended the use of federal officials to help in the area of law enforcement in cities such as Portland and Chicago, where many believe that local authorities have abandoned their responsibilities to keep order. Democrats would repeatedly interrupt him, saying, "I'm reclaiming my time." At times, insults flew like shrapnel. Again, General Barr remained cool as a cucumber, and this probably enhances his status as one of the big three in the president's cabinet, those closest to President Trump, the other two being, of course, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin. The interesting development is that State Attorneys General, at least on the Republican side, weighed in with strong praise for the man at the top, that is, the U.S. Attorney General. One of them, Jeff Landry of Louisiana, said it best, that he demonstrated restraint and gentility, much like the police in Portland, under attack from mobs and demonstrators. So, at the end of the day, no less than five Republican attorneys general weighed in with strong support. I'd have to conclude it was Bill Barr, superstar on Capitol Hill.
John, last Saturday we were paying tribute to Georgia Congressman John Lewis. This week we pay tribute to Herman Cain.
And both of them had similar backgrounds in the sense coming from humble beginnings. Herman Cain was the son of a cleaning lady. His mother and his father was the chauffeur for the president of Coca-Cola and worked several other jobs to raise his family. Herman Cain was someone who succeeded in just about everything he did, and that includes the food business. He rose to be the CEO of Godfather's Pizza and turned the company around. He was president of the National Restaurant Association, and his question to President Bill Clinton at a town hall was pivotal in dismantling the controversial health care plan crafted by the president and then First Lady Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, Herman Cain will best be remembered as a presidential candidate himself, and I had the pleasure of covering him when he ran. He ran as a political outsider, someone who was going to have a corporate tax, income tax, and a national sales tax, all at the same level of 9%, or as he liked to say, 9, 9, and 9. He was conservative. He was someone who eschewed any reference to race around him. He hated the term African-American, saying, "I've been in Africa twice in my life. I've been in America all my life." And people generally liked his plain-spokenness, his conservatism, and his likability. It's hard to believe, but at one point, Herman Cain was the front-running Republican candidate in 2011, and he looked forward to being the conservative alternative to eventual nominee Mitt Romney. And then charges of infidelity and sexual harassment occurred, derailing his candidacy. He knew that he was not going to be the Republican nominee, and he did not want to hurt his wife, Gloria, even though he denied all of the charges. He abandoned the race. Herman Cain remained an active force in politics. He was an early and strong supporter of President Donald Trump. Trump, in turn, sought out his advice on a lot of things and wanted to name him to the Federal Reserve Board. At the time of his death, Herman Cain was selling a new book. It was that he had just completed, Uncle Tom, which is a story about several conservatives who happened to be black. For my part, I covered him since 04 when he was just getting into politics in Georgia, interviewed him when he was a presidential candidate, and always found a delightful man who admitted when he didn't know something and, if he were pressed on a subject, would learn about it. Herman Cain, an American original, and someone who brought to the political arena humor, freshness, and a good nature. He'll be missed.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. We'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll have some good news from Capitol Hill.
We look forward to that. We got Jim Trusty coming up next, but first a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center at 717.
Some slow going traffic on westbound 66 between the Beltway and Nutley Street, where there had been a work zone there along the left side. In addition to that, westbound just before the Beltway, that's exit 64, an accident there on the shoulder. Some activity there that is adding to the delays. On the northbound BW Parkway, north of 450, accident activity there on the right shoulder, so no lanes are blocked. And on 95 southbound in Woodbridge at 123, there is an accident there on the shoulder, and that is causing a brief delay. Now from GarageJoyPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Happy Saturday morning, everyone. Although it's muggy out there, now is the time to get your outdoor activities done. We're tracking scattered storm chances for the afternoon and evening, some of which could be strong to severe. As far as temperatures go, we'll reach highs in the mid to upper 80s, feeling like the 90s, back into the 90s Sunday, feeling over 100. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
73 degrees in the nation's capital, 718 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and Jim Trusty joins us, and he is with IFRA Law here in Washington, D.C., 28 years as a prosecutor, and he was also at the Department of Justice as the chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing well. A federal appeals court has vacated the death sentence of the Boston Marathon bomber. You were actually on the Department of Justice Capital Crime Review Team, and you have tried capital cases.
Yeah, so this is familiar territory, Rick, and I guess one of the things I would tell you without burning any confidences here is that when I was on the Capitol Review unit to kind of assess the case for possible death penalty prosecution, this was one that absolutely grabbed you by the lapels. I mean, it was a very graphic, very detailed submission from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston, and very upsetting. And, you know, again, starting point for this case, everyone's pretty familiar with the Boston Marathon bombing. But one of the things that became public during the trial was that Joker Zarniyev, when he was planting his backpack bomb, he specifically targeted kids. He looked for a bike rack. He saw a bunch of kids standing there. and when the bomb went off, an 8-year-old child named Martin Richard was killed by that decision. So this is one of those situations where if you don't support the death penalty, that's absolutely your right. But if you do support the death penalty, you have to think, you know, if not now, when?
So why now, and what's the next step?
Well, so the Court of Appeals reversed the death penalty verdict for two reasons. They also reversed some firearm charges, which was, there's a lot of counts in the indictment. The firearm charges is a very kind of academic argument about crimes of violence and how the elements are framed within the statute. It's kind of a long-running legal issue, not worth our time. But the death penalty verdict was reversed basically for two reasons. One, which is a real fertile ground for appeals, was the jury selection. You know, this was a high-profile case, a lot of media attention. The judge basically said, I understand that, but we're not going to change venue. We're just going to ask a lot of questions about pretrial publicity and whether jurors can be fair. A lot of jurors got through that process fine. Some did not. But a couple of jurors that got on the trial actually were deceptive about their social media posting. So there's a lesson there, and that wasn't particularly helpful. And so the fact that the judge didn't dig quite deep enough for the appellate court's satisfaction was one reason for the reversal. The other, which I think was actually a really fascinating issue, was about Joker's dead brother, Tamerlan, who they basically wanted to point to in the defense case as the ringleader, as the guy who bullied his younger brother into participation. So that was really kind of the battleground for a lot of the penalty phase in this case. And it turns out that there was an allegation that Tamerlan had orchestrated an invasion of a drug dealer's house on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, which was designed to be his jihad, and he ended up slitting their throats and killing them, according to a friend of his named Totashev, who is a mixed martial arts fighter, who gave a statement to the police. Now, the weird ending to that is when Totashev went in to talk to the FBI and admitted his role in that home invasion, by the end of the interview, he charged at the FBI agents who ended up shooting and killing him in the office. So this was an uncharged triple murder case with some evidence from a now-deceased co-defendant that Tamerlan was involved. The defense knew about it, had some information, but the appellate court basically said they didn't have enough. They should have had the full confession from this man, Totashev. They should have been able to use that to try to say, this is the kind of thing that influenced Joker to be afraid of his big brother. So it's kind of a convoluted story, but very interesting in terms of what the evidentiary issue was and kind of a nugget of facts that I never heard about.
Jim, we've talked a lot about the Michael Flynn case, and that continues. Now, the Department of Justice had filed a motion to dismiss the charges. The judge said no. A 3-judge panel upheld the Department of Justice request. What happened this week and what's next?
Well, God knows what's next. But what happened this week was that at least the majority of 10 judges from the D.C. Federal Court of Appeals decided to accept the petition for an en banc review. One of the judges out of the 11 has recused themselves, but the other 10 have basically said, or some subset of them, has said that we're going to go ahead and hear this case new and have oral argument on August 5th. About what the discretion is for Judge Sullivan when it comes to dismissing this case.
Obviously going to be watching this, Jim. What would you suggest we look for?
Well, you know, oral argument is actually not a perfect predictor for how a court is going to turn out. A lot of these judges are pretty good at playing devil's advocate. So we may not know a whole lot more after August 5th. We may have to wait for them to come out with a ruling. But to me, it's a pretty good test of whether the D.C. appellate court is going to be politically charged or not, because the case law in the circuit is actually very clear that the Department of Justice has given more than enough justification for dismissing the case. And it, in a normal world, that means that the sitting judge basically rubber stamps it and comes in and says case is dismissed. Now, one little wrinkle here is that we're on a writ of mandamus, not a traditional appeal. Remember, General Flynn's lawyers didn't wait for any sort of hearing to happen with Judge Sullivan. They actually took it to the circuit court panel on a writ of mandamus, which is a little narrower, a little more complicated procedurally than if you just waited and took it up as a full-blown appeal. But I hate to say it, but this thing may be marching further and further towards an appeal to the Supreme Court. I mean, I don't know what this en banc group is going to do. I think if they follow the law, they're going to come out and say, even if the reasoning is a little bit different, that the ultimate result of the 3-judge panel was correct, but I sure wouldn't spend much money betting on it.
Attorney General William Barr on Capitol Hill this week in the hearing with the House Judiciary Committee. And if you didn't see this or you didn't see clips from it, it was the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee at their worst. And Jim, I wanted to get your perspective as an attorney, watching the questioning, watching the Attorney General's responses.
Well, I mean, look, I think that Attorney General Barr won the day, clearly, and he was remarkably tolerant of the rudeness that was coming towards him. Apparently, a lot of the Democratic questioners must have gotten together and said, let's just say reclaim my time every time we want to interrupt and shut him down. So they had no interest in getting actual answers, and occasionally the Attorney General would shoot a little bit of a barb at them for that point, and it was actually with a pretty good sense of humor that he did that. So I was impressed. I mean, I don't know that that's anything to do with being a lawyer, except just watching a witness undergo extremely hostile questioning. I don't know how he kept his patience as long as he did. I thought he had a couple of high moments. I mean, the one that really strikes me is that you have a whole bunch of people all the way up to the chairman of that committee, Jerry Nadler, that basically refused to condemn any of the rioting and are happy to condemn law enforcement agents doing things like protecting a courthouse. So when Attorney General Barr said, is it okay now to burn down a federal courthouse, rhetorically, I thought that was a great moment. That really kind of summarized the whole political atmosphere of the circus that he was having to sit through. I have to say my only criticism of him was, and it's a very mild one, was occasionally he'll rise to the bait of answering a question that's really outside the justice lane. So if somebody's asking him a question about coronavirus, I would like to see him just say, why are you asking me questions that, you know, are so far outside of my lane? But that's a pretty mild criticism. I think he was a pretty spectacular witness in terms of both knowledge and temperament.
Jim Trusty at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me, Rick. See ya.
7:27 Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got the news coming up, and then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland.
Based on the recent stock market slide, do you feel your money and investments are safe? Would a repeat of the market losses you experienced earlier in the year or in 2002 and 2008 derail your family's retirement plans? It's time to make a U-turn on your retirement strategy. This Sunday at 1 p.m., tune in to the U-Turn Equity Financial Hour with Tucker and Blake. They'll cover these financial topics and, more importantly, share little-known strategies to keep your money safe and discuss tax-free income. Join the conversation this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Big Mac, Chicken McNuggets, no, Big Mac and Quarter Pounder with cheese, or Filet-O-Fish. You'd be doing the same thing if you were at McDonald's, because you can choose not just one, but two of your favorites for just $6. Tasty Big Mac, crispy 10-piece Chicken McNuggets, juicy Quarter Pounder with cheese, or savory Filet-O-Fish. Enjoy two of your all-time favorites for just $6, if you can decide on the two. Prices and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal, single item at regular price.
Blue Cross Blue Shield believes everyone should have access to health care, no matter who you are or where you live. That's why in every zip code, we're working to improve health and expand access to care, reinventing primary care to reduce chronic illness, and fighting food insecurity one meal at a time. We're investing community by community for the health of America. The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association is an association of independent, locally operated Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies.
I can't believe you finally had LASIK.
Yeah, I was so tired of contacts, I just couldn't do the itching and irritation anymore.
I thought you couldn't do it because of your astigmatism.
I thought so too, but the LASIK Plus doctors say they treat astigmatism all the time, and I'm seeing great.
Wow, but didn't it hurt and take a long time?
Not at all. It was quick and painless. Back to work the next day. Way easier than going to the dentist.
That sounds great. Was it expensive?
They made it affordable. They guaranteed financing and found a plan that fit my budget.
The LASIK Plus surgeons have performed over 2 million procedures in the last 25 years. Find out for yourself how easy, fast, and affordable LASIK can be at LASIK Plus. Call 844-261-2020. Right now, we're extending our 20% friends and family discount to patients treated in August who mention this ad. That's 844-261-2020. LASIKplus20.com. 20% discount applies to Wavelight procedure with lifetime plan. Must mention this ad at center and be treated in August 2020 to qualify. Results may vary. See details at LASIKplus20.com.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News,
Now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Floridians are bracing today for Hurricane Isaias. Hurricane warnings are in effect for the Bahamas and Florida. Meteorologist Tyler Malden.
It is sitting at 85 miles per hour right now with gusts all the way up to 100 miles per hour. And it's sitting right on the Bahamas right now.
Closer to home, a state of emergency has been declared in Virginia as Isaias prepares to move up the East Coast. Governor Ralph Northam says the hurricane could impact parts of Virginia as early as this weekend. The Maryland Emergency Management Agency also warning people in its state to prepare for possible impacts from Isaias. One impact that could be felt this weekend, rip currents. A moderate rip current warning is in effect in Ocean City from 8 this morning through this evening. And if you'd rather not swim in Ocean City this weekend, you may take a stroll on the boardwalk. And if you do, you'll need a mask. An order that went into effect yesterday requires masks on the boardwalk from 8 a.m. to 2 a.m. daily. Mayor Rick Meehan says sometimes it's crowded there, so you'll have to follow the governor's order that requires masks outside if you can't socially distance. That order allows violators to be charged with misdemeanors. City Council Member John Garrick Jr.
We're not out to get, you know, the family from Baltimore, PA, or whoever, to give them a misdemeanor.
But he says if you disrespect officers trying to enforce the rule, you will get a misdemeanor. In sports, the Wizards lost to the Suns 125-112 in their first game of the restart. Traffic and weather next on WMAL.
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 smart bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. It's our weekend special. Save up to $500 on select Sleep Number 360 smart beds, plus special financing and free premium delivery on most beds when you add a base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
Pete Donerson, this ad is sponsored by the Ted O'Neill Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is one of the most common cancers in the United States. If you or a loved one was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and were exposed to Roundup weed killer, you could be entitled to cash compensation. Bayer, the owner of Roundup, will pay more than $10 billion to cancer victims of weed killer Roundup. Call our weed killer cancer hotline now to see if you are entitled to cash compensation. Roundup has been one of the most commonly used herbicides in the U.S. If you or someone you love has been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and exposed to Roundup, call now. Our attorneys have the experience and specialize in fighting for everyday people to get you the compensation you deserve. If you or a loved one has been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and were exposed to Roundup weed killer, even if the loved one has passed away, call 800-975-4149 now to see if you are entitled to compensation. But hurry, time is limited. Call 800-975-4149. 800-975-4149.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Woodbridge, watch out for an accident now on southbound 95 at 123 with the right lane and right shoulder blocked and traffic is slow as you approach the area. Also, on westbound 66 before exit 64 before the Beltway, there is accident activity on the right shoulder. That is causing some very slow traffic in addition to the road work that is still in the roadway westbound between the Beltway and Nutley Street along the left side. Also, do watch out for some construction in Silver Spring on University Boulevard eastbound at Piney Branch Road where you will find the right lane closed. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Happy Saturday morning, everyone. Although it's muggy out there, now is the time to get your outdoor activities done. We're tracking scattered storm chances for the afternoon and evening, some of which could be strong to severe. As far as temperatures go, we'll reach highs in the mid to upper 80s, feeling like the 90s, back into the 90s Sunday, feeling over 100. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
When you have a Wells Fargo checking account, you can pay for things with your phone's digital wallet. Janine and Jeannie will demonstrate on two checkout lanes. Janine unzips her purse to look for a debit card.
Oh, that's weird.
Jeannie holds up her smartphone to the payment terminal and, she's done.
Thank you. I swear I had it here yesterday.
Janine's still going through her purse. She's got a hairbrush, some gum.
I'm so sorry.
Well, just remember that you can pay quickly and simply with your phone's digital wallet when you have a Wells Fargo checking account. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. member FDIC.
trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the impact of coronavirus and the upcoming election, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text the word money to 411-411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trend changes with up to 87.4% accuracy. That's right, 87.4%. Text the word money to 411-411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and better protect yourself from sudden downturns. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. No more guessing when to stay or when to get out. Text money to 411-411 and we'll send you a link to our free demo. Text money to 411-411 so you can better protect your hard-earned capital with Vantage Point. Don't wait. Text the word money to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
Sometimes you take a vacation.
Yeah.
And the happiest part is when you get back home.
Home sweet home.
People are putting time and energy and money into their homes right now.
There's no better place to put it.
And as a result of all that effort.
Yes.
A lot of junk needs to disappear.
Oh, I know the answer to this one.
Okay.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
We make junk disappear.
All you have to do is point.
Yard junk.
Attic junk.
Closet junk.
Garage junk.
Storage shed junk.
Even under the bed junk.
All you have to do is point.
Your house is going to love you more than ever.
And you're going to feel happier too.
You won't just be saying home sweet home anymore.
You'll be saying extremely very sweet.
Big, open, spacious.
Sparkling, junk free home.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Whether you're buying a home or trying to lower your interest rate, finding the right mortgage company is often stressful and time-consuming. Listen this Saturday to the Mortgage Radio Show at 1 p.m. and now on Sunday at 3 p.m. The Mortgage Radio Show is your trusted source for mortgage news. Every weekend, host Teresa Strasser and Sean Metter will give you helpful tools for finding the right mortgage product to fit your needs. So tune in to WMAL every Saturday at 1 p.m. or Sunday at 3 p.m. for the latest rates and information from Network Capital Funding here on WMAL.
.737 Saturday morning update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me. Always great to be on.
President Trump on Air Force One last night, coming out of Florida. He tells reporters that he is considering banning TikTok in the United States and considering doing it as soon as today. For people that are not intimately familiar with TikTok, it is an app. It is a Chinese video sharing social networking platform that is owned by ByteDance. It's a Beijing-based internet technology company. So, Tony, President says there are security concerns about TikTok. Tell us about those security issues, and we'll go from there.
So there's two things that everybody has to remember. China and its government essentially controls all access to all technology in the country. They have access to any company. They're a communist country, and because of being communist, they have access to everything. So despite the fact this may appear to be a private company, the government can do whatever they want with the company and the technology, which brings us to point two. TikTok, while popular and very much something that has been spread through the pandemic as well as COVID, we're talking about literally tens of thousands, if not millions of downloads. This technology, once it's on your phone, because of the way phones operate, operating systems, it has access to everything. And TikTok in particular, because it actually records video and does these other things that have to do with GPS and data, that compromises anything on your phone to the Chinese. I'll just put it that way. That's what happens. So a lot of people probably will not fundamentally care, although they should, because of financial data and other personal data on their phones. But suffice to say, Rick, if I were someone with TikTok on their phone right now, I'm pretty sure that their information on that phone is with the Chinese intelligence service, and I think that's why many corporations have been saying you must delete it and get rid of it. And I think this is why the president now is considering very severe actions against TikTok as a technology immediately.
So it is a strong action being taken by the president, if he goes ahead with it, a strong action being taken against China. I want to contrast the president on China and Joe Biden on China. And I want you to tell us about your op-ed where the headline is, "The only thing Biden will make great again is China."
Yeah. So I wrote an op-ed for the Western Journal, and I walked through the history not only of Joe Biden but of the Democrat Party going back to the Clinton administration. And Bill Gerst did a great job back in those days of a book called Betrayal, which talked about the compromise of U.S. technology during the Clinton administration. And I walk it through to today. And I try to make the case not only will the policy be bad regarding just foreign the aspects of foreign policy we've seen the Democrats invoke and put forth, but in particular China, because Joe Biden in particular has been very soft on China to the point of where he even publicly said that they are not competitors. They are just not on our level. And we all know that's just not true. And so I the TikTok issue, the other issues we've seen from COVID, the expanded use of their military to increase their influence within the region, these are all things that have happened largely because they were neglected during Democrat administrations. President Trump has been clearly standing up to the Chinese. I sincerely believe that standing up to prevent their continued expansionism, which communist regimes tend to do, is the right thing to do, and I outline it in this op-ed. The
president has taken a strong stand against mail-in voting. Help us to understand, I mean, I think most of us basically understand the difference between mail-in voting and absentee ballots, but if you'll clarify that. And then also, what are the key security issues with mail-in ballots?
So I've seen a number of left-wing publications try to commingle mail-in and absentee, and they're very different. Absentee essentially is you going to an office somewhere, you're already registered, you're simply saying, I want a ballot either early or in place of me being able to vote on election day. They give you that ballot, you either vote on the spot or vote at a later date, they send it to you, but it's accounted for. That is to say, it's one for one. One person, one vote, registered, recorded, and sustained. That's very clear. And everybody wants that. One person, one vote. Cast is counted, counted is cast. Mail ballots, mail-in ballots are different. The way states have been doing it is that they basically take the voting registration roll and mail ballots out, just mail them out in the blind, whether you request it or not. And that means people who are dead, people who have moved out of the area, all these ballots get out there and are running around, moving around with no accountability. It's very dangerous. This is where the term ballot harvesting comes in, especially in places like nursing homes and places like that where people may not even know they come in, and they can be controlled by individuals who are less than good integrity. So that's the danger of that. That's the difference, and that's why it's very clear that that absentee voting is fine. Mail-in voting is not good.
And one thing, some of the pundits who are so supportive of the mail-in voting are saying, well, look, it'll have a barcode, it's going to be on a certain type of paper, and people will be looking for that kind of paper when they go to count the votes. I would think if somebody was really good at it, they could probably come up with the same paper and probably fabricate barcodes. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, so that's the other security aspect of this that we have to all recognize, is that there will be foul play from groups within the United States and foreign Again, Rick, we've talked about this a number of times. Foreign countries are not looking for a specific outcome. They're simply working to undermine the confidence in our democracy and create chaos. So any country which has the ability to understand and quickly respond and print, someone could get a copy of a ballot, make copies of it, and interject it into the system for purposes of creating havoc. And to your point, Rick, you know, people will say, oh, these things are all secure. They have barcodes. Well, what if you have a bunch of these things show up that aren't actually real? What happens then? How do you determine are the real ones fake? Clearly, that would create by itself panic. So simply introducing ballots which are near real by a foreign threat would create the panic and undermine the system as a foreign entity would want to do. So it doesn't. They don't have to get it right, Rick. They just have to get it into the system. And that's what the danger is. Can you imagine Pennsylvania with 100,000 ballots which don't look like they're real, kind of real? What does that what happens then? Do they stop the election? Do they do the recount? What happens? That's the objective of foreign threats, not to upset the election outcome, just to upset the election itself to create the lack of confidence in it. So that's what the danger is.
Got a minute left, Tony, real quick. Yeah. Military contractors linked to the Kremlin have seized control of two of Libya's largest oil facilities in recent weeks. Of course, that heightens the tensions between Russia and the U.S. Right. And Russia expanding its footprint in North Africa. Real quick, you have some recommendations on what we should do about that.
Yeah, I've been putting forth, we've talked about it here, we need an Arab NATO. We really do, an Arab or Gulf and Red Sea Treaty area NATO that can deal with this sort of thing. It's not our job to be the policeman of the world, but I think everybody recognizes the danger of having the Russians back involved in the Middle East. The Europeans should be involved. Clearly, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, our other allies should be doing it. So we really do need to organize around a military condominium like we have in Europe, in the Middle East, to try to essentially bring stability to the region. The Russians running around doing this sort of thing, I just don't think it's going to lead to a stable Libya. So,
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, again, we point you to his op-ed at westernjournal.com. The only thing Biden will make great again is China. Tony, thank you as always.
Great. Hey, thank you, Rick.
Next up, we'll chat with KT McFarland, but first, we've got Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center at 747.
In Virginia, on 95 southbound at 123 in Woodbridge, you will still find accident activity in the right lane. Traffic is very slow from Lorton Road. On 66 westbound, that is still slow between the Beltway and Nutley Street with a work zone there and an accident on the shoulder just before the Beltway. BW Parkway northbound, just north of 450, there is still some accident activity on the right shoulder that is not causing any delays. Now from GarageJoyRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Patchy morning fog gives way to a mix of sun and clouds today. High humidity sticks around, so it certainly still feels like summer for the first day of August. Highs in the mid to upper 80s will feel like the 90s. You'll also want to stay weather aware this afternoon and evening for scattered storms. Some may be strong to severe, especially west of the district. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
73 degrees in the nation's capital at 7:48.
Proud to be Washington's home for Rush Limbaugh.
This program has provided me the greatest satisfaction and happiness.
105.9 FM.
It is a family.
WMAL.
Hey, it's Larry O'Connor, and thanks to super low mortgage rates, the real estate market is booming. In fact, for the first time ever, rates for a 30-year fixed have fallen into the twos. That's historical. Right now, more than ever, you need a true professional. And Mark Livingstone at Cornerstone First Financial is that professional. I know this firsthand. Mark's team just helped me through my recent home purchase. What I love about Mark's team is they showed me all my options. They counseled me on the best approach for my loan. He'll do that for you too. The process was quick. It was thorough. It was detail oriented. Boy, it's a fantastic experience from start to finish. Even using their free float down option, it got me a lower rate. You see, Mark is a lender and a broker, so he has all the programs available, unlike a bank. Plus, he guarantees to meet or beat any competitor on this station. Whether you're buying a home or you're refinancing, call my friend Mark Livingstone, 202-625-1221. That's 202-625-1221 or online at cornerstonefirst.com. That's cornerstonefirst.com.
Come summer in Old Bay and enjoy breathtaking views of blue skies, grass overtaken by weeds, and your neighbor taking the trash out shirtless. Sip an Old Bay Bloody Mary as you relax in a lawn chair overlooking the kiddie pool and the trampoline. And savor Old Bay steamed shrimp as you take in the calm, tranquil sound of your husband going to town with the weed whacker. Old Bay, you don't just like it.
Big Mac, Chicken McNuggets, no, Big Mac and Quarter Pounder with cheese.
Or Filet-O-Fish.
You'd be doing the same thing if you were at McDonald's, because you can choose not just one, but two of your favorites for just $6. Tasty Big Mac, crispy 10-piece Chicken McNuggets, juicy Quarter Pounder with cheese, or savory Filet-O-Fish. Enjoy two of your all-time favorites for just $6, if you can decide on the two. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton, and sometimes when I'm out and about, people will say, is it really true that you loved your Good Feet Art Support so much that you bought the store? Of course it is, I say. And I never dreamed that I would run marathons and continue to stay active without my feet getting in the way. When I bought the store in 2014, I would have never imagined that tens of thousands of customers would find relief from foot, knee, and back pain. The support of these loyal customers has allowed us to open new stores throughout Virginia, Maryland, and now North Carolina. I love to hear their stories of walking, running, and just enjoying their new life pain-free. Don't let foot, knee, or back pain keep you from living the life you love. Come into the Good Feet store for your free fitting and test walk and get your own Good Feet story. To find the store nearest you, go to goodfeet.com. The Good Feet store is located in Fairfax, Leesburg, and Rockville, Maryland.
It's the first day of August on the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined each week by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
I've been spending a lot of time this morning talking about the testimony of Attorney General William Barr in front of the House Judiciary Committee this week. And part of the reason is it is such a shining example of what is wrong in Washington when you watch the hearing. You can either watch 5.5 hours of it or you can listen to about 1.5 minutes and you'll get a sense of how dreadful the tone is in Washington. And you have a perspective on it this morning, and I wanted to get your take.
Well, look, I agree with you about the tone. I think, you know, the whole country has been at home for 4 months sort of reassessing life, spending time with their families, thinking about their purpose in life. What have these guys been doing, the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee? My God, they've been sharpening their teeth. They should have been tested for rabies, not coronavirus, because they behave like a pack of snarling, rabid dogs who couldn't wait to take a bite out of a very esteemed senior jurist in the nation. Anyway, look, what they should have asked Barr about, which they totally missed, was China policy. The administration in the last month has made a historic 70-year shift in U.S. foreign policy, and it got no press coverage. I mean, the Attorney General kicked it off about a month or so ago with a speech about China's economic exploitation. The FBI director gave a speech about Chinese spying and intellectual property theft. And then National Security Advisor O'Brien gave a speech basically on wolf diplomacy. And then Pompeo finished it out last week with the plan for moving forward. He made the case and how are we going to deal with it. This is a major shift in the most major aspect of American foreign policy. And yet Washington didn't even get on their radar screen. But what I did find interesting, that again, the snarling pack of dogs didn't focus on at all, was what Barr said about the unmasking investigation. We knew that it was happening, but it was sort of a sideshow to Durham. But I think it's now got the potential to be far more consequential even than the Durham investigation, is for three reasons. Barr said in the testimony that the investigation to the unmaskings had expanded, that they now have their own special investigator, John Bash of Texas, And that at the unmaskings they now realize happened over not just a three-month period between the election and the inauguration, but Barr said a far longer period. So what does that mean? Well, it either went on during the campaign, which sounds increasingly like they were spying on the Trump campaign, even more so than we've already had evidence of, or it even continued during the Trump administration, which was what I thought was happening when they were coming after me. So, number one, it's expanded, and it's and the second part of it, though, is it brings it into the White House, into the West Wing of the White House. So far, the Durham investigation is mostly the Department of Justice, abuse of power, Mueller abuse of power, FBI abuse of power, intelligence community abuse of power. But the unmaskings bring it into the West Wing, because who are the big unmaskers? The Vice President, Vice President Biden, National Security Advisor Susan Rice, White House Chief of Staff, a U.N. ambassador. So what was all that about? Then the final thing, though, is that it's going to be a fairly straightforward investigation. There are 39 people who asked for unmaskings that we know of so far. You get 39 people and you ask them, did you make this request? Why? Who did you talk to about the request? And if they claim ignorance, as so far Vice President Biden and the U.N. ambassador, former U.N. ambassador Samantha Power, they said, we didn't know anything about it. Our names might have been on there, but it wasn't us. Well, who was it? Who was authorized to put their names on these requests? And if everybody claims ignorance, if all 39 people claim ignorance or have sort of a goofed up story, guess what? There will be a paper trail a mile long about this. Because these are, you know, this will be promises to be the tip of the iceberg. So I'm thinking whatever happens with Durham, I'm looking at the other one, because I think that it's a bigger thing than we thought. It brings it directly into the West Wing. I've worked in the West Wing for, you know, half of my government career. And the West Wing is a small place. You think of it as this big, gigantic place because you see these big offices and rooms on TV. It's not. It's not really much bigger than the size of a mid-sized dental clinic. And their offices are right next to each other. So if you've got the chief of staff who's in one corner, the vice president who's in the middle, and the national security advisor who's on the other corner of the building, you know, they're talking to each other. What are they saying to each other? Why do they have these unmaskings? Because historically, unmaskings are supposed to happen in the following way. You know, we don't wiretap American citizens without cause. So you have FISA warrants. You can wiretap American citizens with cause. We know that that was all goofed up by the Obama administration. The other reason is because you're tracking a terrorist, a foreign terrorist, or a drug dealer. And he's talking to an American citizen, and you want to know, because you're a mid-level guy in the intelligence community or at the Treasury Department, you want to know what more about who the American is who's part of this drug deal or part of this potential terrorist attack, so you get the name unmasked. When they were unmasking for General Flynn, it would have been obvious by the context of the conversation who it was who was on the other side of the Russian ambassador. So I'm looking at this one. So
we got about 2 minutes left, KT, and I wanted to ask you about Herman Cain. Of course, he passed away this week. I know that you knew Herman Cain, and you have some, again, you always bring a different perspective in on things, different from what we're hearing from other people in the media, and I just wanted your reflections on Herman Cain.
You know, Herman Cain was Donald Trump before Donald Trump was Donald Trump, because Herman Cain was a really successful businessman. He had a career in the food services industry. The one he was most famous for, he worked at Pillsbury, other places, Burger King. But the one he was most famous for was he took a national franchise, which was Godfather's Pizza, which was struggling and bankrupt, and he turned it around, reorganized it, restructured it, turned it around to make it one of the most successful food franchises in the nation. He was also chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas. He was president and CEO of the American Restaurateurs Association. And in his second career, he was a TV talk show host, radio talk show host, and a columnist. And then the third career was in politics when he ran for president. And to me, I look at, he was just such a decent guy. And he came to my attention, or I came to his attention when he was running, and somebody said, because they knew he didn't have much experience in foreign policy, well, who are you taking advice from for foreign policy? And he mentioned my name. I'd never met him, so I gave him a quick call after that, so I think we ought to talk. And so I gave him a few foreign policy briefings, and he didn't have a big background in foreign policy, but he had a lot of common sense, like Trump. So he had a lot of common sense, and he could say things like, well, wait, what are we doing in the Middle East? Two unsuccessful wars, trillions of dollars, American blood being shed, what's our objective here? And the other thing is that he had a terrific sense of humor. He said to me at one point, he said, will you be my secretary? I want you as Secretary of State. Will you be Secretary of State when I'm president? And I said, well, when you're president, how about if you're president? Let's get first things first. You got to win. And so, long pause, and then he chuckled, and that big, huge, toothy, ear-to-ear grin, and he said, I guess you got it right. I've got to get first things first. The thing about Herman Cain was that as an African-American, he grew up in Jim Crow South with every disadvantage you can imagine, and yet never a chip on his shoulder, never a complaint. He just thought that if you got a good education, scholarships in his case, you worked really hard, and you kept an eye to the future, that you could succeed in America. And that, plus his sunny sort of Reagan-esque optimism, I think if he had gotten the Republican nomination in 2012, he could have been president, and wow, what a different place we'd be in right now.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Garden Sense follows the news next at 8 o'clock.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.